Richard, of another talent that ESPN really wanted that they lost. So there's been a lot of people writing about, you know, Olbermann leaving and Simmons leaving. I mean, half of them got kicked out the door. They wanted to keep Tirico, and they tried to keep Tirico. Bayless, who is somebody else that ESPN wanted to keep. They really wanted to keep him, and they couldn't come up with the money to keep him from going to Fox Sports. So in the span of 2 days, there are these two big defections of people that ESPN wanted to keep and were outbid on. And going back the past 20 years, I can't think of, maybe when Olbermann first left SportsCenter, I can't think of this happening to ESPN ever. And 2 years ago, I couldn't imagine anybody making these decisions to leave ESPN because ESPN would pay to keep them.
Welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, where each week we interview a member of the sports media. I'm your host, Richard Deitch. My producer is Alan Kim. And for this episode, we're going to do a little something different. Our guest earlier in the week was Jessica Mendoza, the ESPN MLB analyst. But with so much news going on in the sports media, from Mike Tirico moving from ESPN to NBC, to Skip Bayless announcing he is not re-signing with ESPN and clearly on his way to Fox and FS1, to Big Ten media rights, to Bill Simmons announcing when his new HBO show will debut. And just, it's a crazy time in the sports media, so wanted to bring somebody on where we can just BS about it and hopefully entertain all of you who are interested in this topic. And there are many people interested in this topic, which is awesome. So John Orand, the fine writer for Sports Business Daily and Sports Business Journal, covers this beat very wired, will be the guest. And I'm going to try to get Orand to take some opinions on some stuff. Guy's always middle of the road. Let's see if let's try to push him somewhere today. At least take a stand, John. So I'm really looking forward to him. He's one of the people I respect most in the business, and it should be fun. All right, and as promised, we bring in the fine Sports Business Daily, Sports Business Journal reporter, John Orand, who I believe is in Washington, D.C. today. Am I correct about that, John?
Talking to you from the capital city, of course, yeah.
Beautiful. A lot of, that's quite a great news town to be in at the moment, given the election season. But we are not here to talk about Ted Cruz, John Kasich, or Donald Trump.
Though we are, Cruz, when he did call a basketball hoop a ring, that maybe we can somehow get that in there. There's sports there, right?
Right, that's true. But we will be talking about a lot of narcissists because this conversation is about the sports media. And so let us start, John, because the public demanded that you come on today. You ended up being the person most requested out of when I put out on Twitter, who should I sort of have a sports media nerd conversation with? So you won that. Let's start off with the news that you broke. And that would be Mike Tirico leaving ESPN for NBC Sports. None of the parties have officially announced this. I always enjoy getting five declines in a story, which is what I got the other day, which was great. But this is your story. You broke it. I did not see this coming. I wrote a column not too long ago offering some like hypothesis about where NBC could go in the post-Al Michaels era. And Mike Tirico turned out to be the person I thought made the most sense, but nowhere did I see them connecting the dots this early. So having led on this story, what do you make of Tirico going to NBC?
Well, to me, NBC wanted a plan in place for Al Michaels and Bob Costas, and Tirico fit that plan. I personally think Tirico's fabulous. I think he calls a really good game, and he's so versatile. He can host just as well as he can call play-by-play. He can go from the NBA seamlessly to the NFL down to college, and you wouldn't know it. He's a completely versatile person that I think he's somebody that NBC really wants there. But to me, what I find to be really shocking about this is, can you think, Richard, of another talent that ESPN really wanted that they lost? So there's been a lot of people writing about, you know, Olbermann leaving and Simmons leaving. I mean, half of them got kicked out the door.
Correct.
They wanted to keep Tirico, and they tried to keep Tirico, and big bad ESPN that makes $6.50 per subscriber per month couldn't come up with the kind of money to keep what some people think is like the best young, young being 50 years old, I guess, but the best young play-by-play person out there, to me, is utterly shocking. I mean, I couldn't see this coming either if you had told me this about a month ago.
Yeah, well, see, to me, you hit on like what is the sort of the narrative that's being put out there, but is incorrect. And that this is why I'm very happy you're on the phone. There's no doubt that ESPN has lost high-profile talent, but you have to look inside each individual situation as to why they left and who prompted them leaving. ESPN made the decision on Bill Simmons. ESPN made the decision on Keith Olbermann. They didn't want to re-sign these guys. ESPN eventually came to a contractual out with Jason Whitlock and the CAA posse. So again, they made those decisions in terms of not re-signing talent. Tirico is different because he, I totally agree with you. Generally speaking, the Kremlin does not lose high profile talent when they want it. And this was shocking to me that someone who had been there a quarter century had basically, in my opinion, the best profile for any play-by-play person, maybe Chris Fowler, it's, you know, depending on what you love versus your sport. And for him to go, given that he was essentially a lifer, stunned me. And my thought would be twofold. Like you said, I think he's essentially been guaranteed the Al Michaels, post-Al Michaels spot for Sunday Night Football. And I think he's been guaranteed a very, very high-profile spot at the Olympics, whether it's the Costas role or something else. And then finally, John, the money that Mike Tirico must have got was extraordinary because I don't think you make that move if you're Mike Tirico unless the dollar figures are, out of this world. John Gruden probably, you know, depending on who you believe in sourcing, makes $6, $7 million, whatever. And I think Tirico is either in that ballpark or above that ballpark. And that is an extraordinary amount of money for a singular play-by-play talent.
Yeah, and for Tirico, he's been at ESPN since 1991. I think that this really caught a lot of ESPN executives off guard. They thought he was a loyal guy, and even through the when they laid off 300 people, they still thought he would be sort of loyal to ESPN. And you know, money talks, and I think you're also seeing you know, when they laid off 300 people, all of a sudden everybody else's loyalty gets dinged a little bit.
Right.
And I think that this is happening from there. But then what also surprised me, I mean, this has been a crazy week and it's only Wednesday, Richard. The Bayless, who is somebody else that ESPN wanted to keep.
They did.
They really wanted to keep him and they couldn't come up with the money to keep him from going to Fox Sports. So in the span of 2 days, there are these two big defections of people that ESPN wanted to keep and were outbid on. And going back the past 20 years, I can't think of maybe when Olbermann first left SportsCenter. I can't think of this happening to ESPN ever. And 2 years ago, I couldn't imagine anybody making these decisions to leave ESPN because ESPN would pay to keep them.
We will definitely get to Bayless. I want to have a discussion on the Sith Lord. So we will get to him in a second. But the one thing about Mike Tirico, John, that's interesting to me. And again, you reported this, and then I would say re-reported your reporting. I have my own sources as we all do, and we both came up with the same name. Tirico leaving leaves obviously a huge hole in ESPN's most important property. That's Monday Night Football. That show gets the most viewers for that network. It's their signature show, in my opinion. It's their biggest connection to the NFL in terms of game inventory, and ultimately that's why they pay their billions of dollars for the NFL. We both have heard that Sean McDonough is the leading candidate to replace Tirico. I think that in terms of that fit, John, they could not do better. To me, he's their best play-by-play person, regardless of sport, a total professional, great big game caller. You talk to the analysts he's worked with, they love him. So I think Gruden will seamlessly work with Sean. What that does, though, hasn't really been talked about a lot. It does then break up one of the great college football teams that they have with Sean McDonough and Chris Spielman. But is it of your belief, too, that ultimately ends up being the solution for ESPN? They slot McDonough into, I think, what they would consider as their most important play-by-play role?
Yeah, I think we both heard it from various sources, and I think you can pretty much go to the bank with that, unless something drastic happens. I think Sean McDonough's going to be the next guy at Monday Night Football. And I think one of the things, I think he's a good play-by-play person as well, but the one of the things about Monday Night Football is Gruden is such a personality there, and I thought that Tirico did a great job of sort of managing that personality, because sometimes you can get, you and I have disagreed on like Mike Mayock, you know, and he right. sometimes overruns the play-by-play person just kind of by getting into the X's and O's too much. Well, you know, Gruden gets into the X's and O's, and I thought that Tirico managed it really well. And I think that's something that McDonough, I mean, McDonough's been with Raftery. He's done some stuff with Vitale. So he knows big personalities, and he's able to sort of naturally weave them in and out of the broadcast. So I think that he's somebody that they view as a good complement to Gruden, as opposed to, you know, it's always tough to figure out who the best play-by-play person is. It's more of how can you get some sort of chemistry going? And he's shown that he has been able to develop chemistry with a lot of, you know, big egos.
Yeah, it was well said. Obviously, all this is subjective. And a perfect example is I'm a big Mike Mayock guy. John has been critical of Mike Mayock talking too much. But that's sort of what makes this fun in terms of that the business is, to a large extent, subjective in terms of performance, maybe outside of Vin Scully, who, generally speaking, everybody would agree is the best of the best. John, the what Mike Tirico leaving does in-house, it sets up a lot of potential openings for people. From being the host of the U.S. Open and Wimbledon to the number two person on the ESPN's NBA coverage to ESPN Radio. So my sense is, John, and I imagine you think so too, there's got to be a lot of agents who are peppering ESPN executives right now to try to get their people to slot in to what are a number of openings, because Tirico really had a lot of jobs there.
Yeah, and in fact, I remember when Jim Miller was writing the book, the ESPN book, there was a lot of grumbling that Tirico did too much and that he wasn't giving enough opportunity to other people to sort of come in. Well, now this opportunity exists, and I think that one of the things that you may end up seeing here, certainly you're going to get a ton of agents, and I don't think ESPN has thought too hard about the other roles beyond Monday Night Football, because Monday Night Football is such an important one. But you're certainly going to get a lot of agents, but then I think you're also going to end up with people like, you know, the rumor that's been out on Twitter about Brad Nessler,
right?
You know, there aren't big positions that they're going to have Brad Nessler fill. So all of a sudden you can end up with a longtime employee who gets disgruntled and looks to move elsewhere. So I think that Tirico leaving is going to create a lot of opportunity for other people, but it's also going to create a lot of angst and possibly more people leaving Bristol, that more big names leaving Bristol.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up Brad Nessler. I first saw that, to be fair, from Clay Travis, part of Fox Sports' new likability figures. And so let's give him credit for that. And I think there is probably some truth to that. In talking to some people at ESPN who would be in the know, I would think Nessler could be looking elsewhere. Does he end up at CBS? Possibly. I mean, you know, David Burson is a former high-ranking ESPN executive, and I think he has a fondness for certain ESPN talent. Do I think Nessler would replace Vern Lundquist on the SEC? Here's the only thing there. Listen, I am in the tank for Vern. I love Vern. Vern can work till he's 95 for me. So I've said this in print. I'll continue to say it. I know him personally as well. I really like him. So I hope he stays forever. Nessler has worked with Danielson in the past, so there is a connection there. But John, I'm glad you're on today, because I wanted to ask you this. The one thing about Nessler taking over, let's say at a certain point for Lundquist, and Nessler's got great pipes and he's a good announcer, he's not per se young. So if you're trying to set the SEC up for like a 10, 15, 20 year run, is Brad Nessler the guy you want to come in and replace Vern Lundquist on that package? That would be my only sort of question mark, in that it's not like a 40-year-old person, a 40-year-old woman or man coming in replacing Vern Lundquist. It would be someone, you know, fairly close to Lundquist's generation.
Yeah, and not only that, but Lundquist is the SEC. Even before he became the SEC, he's, you know, he grew up down south, and he's just all about the SEC. Actually, it's Texas South.
Texas,
can I call that?
Yeah, of course. Texas A&M is now in the SEC, of course.
Yeah, all right, there you go. But I don't know Nestor's background, but I don't. So he may be from SEC country, but I don't view him in my head as sort of the typical SEC play-by-play person. So I truly believe CBS when they tell me that they really haven't set up the transition plan for Vern yet.
Yeah, I believe that. The logical successor would be Carter Blackburn, depending on whether CBS executives think he could lead a package. And I don't know whether they believe he can or can't, but that would be the logical successor just because he's been number two on those games.
Yeah. And also, you know, this gets back to, I love talking about the announcers because it's fun, but is anybody going to not turn on Alabama Auburn because somebody happens to be announcing it or somebody doesn't happen to be announcing it?
No.
So it is fun, but can somebody lead the SEC package? I think that they'd be comfortable with, you know, somebody that might not be a household name.
I agree with you. I mean, throughout all of this, with the exception, at least in my opinion, of Inside the NBA, where I think Charles Barkley actually does bring viewers to that program, and you know, Scully, obviously, and Dodgerland, there's just few announcers who, if any, who have the ability to bring eyeballs to a product. What they do, John, I think you'd agree, is they have a dramatic impact on how you view what you are watching and your enjoyment level. And the perception of everything. But what they don't do is they don't bring a single new eyeball to the game because you're watching the game because you want to watch the game, whether it's Brad Nessler calling it or whether it's, John Oran and Richard Deitch calling it.
Those ratings would crater.
I agree. Yeah, that might not be the best example.
I do think that there are a handful. I mean, John Madden keeps coming to mind,
But he's retired at this point, so I don't put him there, right?
But like in a blowout game, I'll continue watching because I find him to be entertaining. I get there aren't too many. There aren't too many of those in the history of sports television, much less doing it right now.
Right now, this is a good segue to, and we'll eventually cover a couple other topics. I want to get to the video that Julie DeCaro and Sarah Spain were part of that public service announcement this week because that got a lot of traction. But before we do that, let us talk about Fox Sports One, or I should now call it FS1 because, you know, I respect Fox's branding efforts. So I want to be clear here. The interesting thing here is that, you know, Jamie Horowitz, and people who listen to this podcast know my history with him. Again, personally, like the guy, had coffee with him many times. Fun guy to talk to. Professionally, he is the Emperor Palpatine of sports television. He makes sports television, I don't even know what the word would be, but if like back in the day, if you ever saw the Simpsons cartoon when, Elvis Presley basically drank some moonshine and then shot up his TV, that's usually how I'm feeling watching Jamie Horowitz program. But Jamie Horowitz has made it clear that he wants opinionists, he wants provocateurs, he wants bloviators, he wants people who create conversation at his network because he believes that that is the future of afternoon block television and morning block television. And so, as both of us have worked on over the last couple of days, Skip Bayless announced that he did not accept ESPN's contractual offer. I have it on, I think, very, very solid ground. That offer was $4 million per year and above. And clearly, Jamie Horowitz went above that. The question is how above that? Sources have told me that Bayless was offered more than $5 million by Fox Sports One. I would believe that makes sort of sense in terms of who reps Bayless and what they're looking for. And so he is being brought into FS1, John, as a linchpin of Horowitz's, opinion, provocateur, debate-oriented television. So before we even get into, like, what we think of that, what did you think of the move? Because it gets back to what you just said. You do not see people turn down ESPN and certainly turn down ESPN at that kind of money.
Yeah. So using those numbers, ESPN had offered $4 million a year and Bayless got, let's say, $5 million from Fox. Are you telling ESPN can't bridge that gap?
Excellent question.
What's a million between friends, right?
Right.
But I've been covering ESPN throughout its rise. And I can't recall them They really wanted to keep Skip Bayless. They're not kicking him out the door.
Which is an issue in itself, but continue on. Right. Yeah.
Well, it's extraordinary that they're allowing an opinionist who has already announced that he's leaving to stick on their airwaves through the end of the NBA playoffs. You don't see this happen. They like him and they want to keep him. And it's fascinating to me that ESPN couldn't find the money to keep somebody that they really like.
So do you think to get into this a little bit, do you think that, and I don't know Skip Bayless, and quite frankly, I don't want to know him. But do you think it's in this kind of decision, is it talent just really going for the biggest dollars, or does it get into, he's worked with Horowitz before, and you know this, John, both of us have covered hundreds and hundreds of people on television. Television people really enjoy being told how great they are. We love you. We're going to build this around you. Los Angeles is a beautiful place. The sun's out every day. You know, TV people, and this is not to knock them, we would all be susceptible to this. When people start romancing you and telling you how much they love you, you generally speaking in that business, listen.
Yeah, and I think it goes beyond that, though. I mean, you've had coffee with Jamie. Jamie is a charming guy, and he's somebody who has really been able to one of the things that I'm most struck by at Fox Sports One are the number of people that came from ESPN to follow Jamie on this trek across the country to try to build up afternoon programming at this network, you know, virtually nobody watches.
Right.
When Jamie got blown out of the Today Show, all of the press that was coming from sort of the media reporters, not sports media reporters, but media reporters, was about how he didn't get along with people and how he didn't play well. Well, that whole narrative is completely contrary to what we're seeing happening at Fox Sports One. I mean, Colin Coward came over. Actually, there's another one that ESPN did want to keep and ended up going. But Colin Coward came over. All these behind the scenes people came over, and they're just following Jamie. He's like a Pied Piper over there. And I think that I can see where Bayless, more than getting romanced of, hey, we love you, because I'm sure ESPN was saying the same things. It was like, I trust Jamie Horowitz to be the person that's going to develop their afternoon programming, and I can be part of something that's growing, as opposed to something that, to be fair, isn't growing as much as it was growing at one point.
Right. Well, first of all, they're following him into sports television hell, but that's another story. The one thing, John, that I agree with everything you said about Horowitz, and he definitely has his loyal lieutenants who have followed him from Bristol, and that does say something, including talent. But he has also at Fox blown up the structure a little bit, and in my opinion, in a troubling way. Under Jamie, a lot of very talented producers have been laid off. We're talking multiple Emmy Award-winning producers, feature producers, and that has basically been gutted. They're not doing that anymore. You've essentially seen the end of, for the most part, news and editorial at FS1, at least where they were headed or where they thought they were headed initially. You have seen talent that's not being re-signed. Some of these names are going to float out over the next couple of weeks, and I think they're going to surprise some people. You've seen longtime Fox Sports One staffers leaving this company. Again, some of the names have floated out. You're going to see more names float out. So, you know, and I don't want this podcast to just be sort of like blasting on Jamie, but for the loyalty and for the people like the Baylesses and the Cowards who have come over, he has disrupted a lot of other people at FS1. And there is a schism there between a group of executives who don't like the direction FS1 is heading, and clearly Jamie, given a lot of power under Fox, pushing the direction that he wants. Is what I said, in your opinion, do you think that's a fair and accurate statement?
Oh, absolutely. And there certainly is a schism at Fox Sports One. There was a schism at ESPN when he was there too. But that the prism of that schism is that Jamie has the power right now.
Right.
And so that schism is just kind of like people that are, you know, bemoaning what's going on. But right now, Eric Shanks is completely 100% backing Jamie in whatever Jamie wants to do. So whatever schism there may be, and it is getting at rather senior levels there, I think, it's kind of a powerless schism.
I think, listen, Jamie does that. He's Jamie Lannister right now of Game of Thrones. He has the power. He's not Jamie Lannister right now because the Lannisters are in a bit of trouble, but he's Jamie Lannister prior after he slayed the king. So I agree with you. The thing is that's interesting in television is that the king very quickly can be beheaded if the ratings aren't there. One last thing on...
One of Jamie's lines that he always uses is, you know, you are what your record says you are.
Stole from Bill Parcells.
Bill Parcells. Right. Well, what did you call him? 0.0? You know, if those ratings, how long do you give those ratings? So if he keeps coming out with that statement at some point after a year, how long do we give Jamie until he is what his record says he is?
Yeah.
Because the record right now is with TV viewers.
It's not good.
They're not good.
Yeah. And I think Bill Simmons is the one who famously called it Fox Sports 0.1. I have to sort of give him credit for that. do you think, listen, I'm on the record as saying that I think in the short term, this kind of provocative television can get you more ratings. So I think if they put the Baylesses and the Cowards and Whitlocks and whoever else is coming on, actually, they hired Nick Wright, a guy from Houston who I like, actually. I think he's a pretty bright guy. We'll see how they use him. But, John, my thought is, and this is where I would disagree with Jamie, and I know you guys at Sports Business Journal have written a lot about this, and I appreciate the sort of the thoughtfulness and the intellect that you guys have approached this. I could probably use some of that myself. The my thought, though, John, is that Fox Sports 1 or FS1 is very different, or the landscape is very different than what it was back when Fox News came out. There, I understand Jamie's making this corollary that he's going to try to create sort of the Fox News of sports. But what I would say when Fox News, and you're an old cable sort of guy, so you've covered the space a long time, there was a void for conservative television when Fox News really started blowing up. Those voices were not being heard on CNN and at other places. So to me, Fox News came in and filled a void that was needed or demanded by a very large swath of people in this country. There is no shortage of sports opinions anywhere in this country, from your local sports talk to any blog you read to national places like ours. So I think Jamie his calculation, I think, is off, because you can find sports debate and opinion anywhere. And just adding another voice to the universe, I don't think is going to be the long-term solution. And I think in the end, FS1's whole plan is going to be they're just going to try to outrageous themselves on a daily basis. So, I mean, is it worth being like Springer and Morton Downey Jr. just to get 90,000 people watching instead of 60,000? I long-term, I don't think this is a successful plan. But if you want to counter me, I'd definitely be interested in listening.
Yeah, I'll counter that a little bit, because I don't know if it's going to be a successful plan either. I mean, that I'm dying to see if it does. But here's where I think the Fox News analogy works. Look, the media landscape is completely different. So we're not actually just talking about like launching a TV network, but we're talking about sort of the ethos behind it. And so you live in New York and I live in D.C., which are two reliably blue states.
Right.
And there's a whole red state. Have you ever seen anybody complain that ESPN is too conservative?
No.
I mean, so when you just kind of go to like the ESPYs and Caitlyn Jenner, you know, that's something that was on both coasts. People loved and championed. But, you know, in the middle of the country, people hated that. They thought that they found it to be like an affront that you would give somebody a courage award just because they kind of come out as a woman, which is, you know, that there was that meme that kind of went out about these, you know, women that were, you know, fighting in wars and everything that, you know, were false memes. But there's a you know, the Red Sox, Yankees, East Coast, West Coast bias. And if Fox can get in and try to appeal to this is half the electorate. I mean, look at the last like three elections. If Fox can get in and appeal to those people without being, you don't have to be Jerry Springer. You just have to come up with opinions that don't match yours. And so I think that that's what they're trying to do. And so they're trying to get away from, you know, the political leanings of people that live in big urban left-wing cities. And I think that, that you're seeing sort of Clay Travis kind of talk about that a little bit. You're seeing Whitlock talk a little bit about that. And I think that there could be something there, because I do know that people on my Twitter timeline, they get really frustrated with ESPN because they feel that ESPN's too liberal.
That's interesting. And I think you just made an excellent argument for what would be a successful plan. And so while I disagree with you, I think that's really smart. And I think if you stick to that, you might have a shot. I would still contend I don't believe the personalities that he has hired are those who are going to take him over the finish line. But I think you make an interesting point. And I have a lot of people on my Twitter timeline as well from flyover country in the middle of this country. And you are absolutely correct. There is certainly a political divide in many places. Absolutely, ESPN gets accused of being too liberal, which I think at times they are. But I think at other times that's an incredibly false narrative. And so that's interesting. The last thing I will say on this sort of topic is one of my favorite things is when Fox personalities start pretending that they're the iconoclasts and the underdogs while working for Rupert Murdoch News Corp and a multiple billion dollar company. I hate to break it to you, fellas. You're the establishment. You're just playing a different establishment game. All right, we're going to take a break. And as we take a break, I want to talk about a new podcast that has been focusing on the NFL draft. As I tape this, it's NFL draft week. And Sports Illustrated has a new miniseries that's taken people much deeper than any big board. It's the podcast has been called Draft Season, where each pick is a player and each player has a story. In the latest episode of Draft Season, Andy Staples talks to John and Nathan Theus, born 18 months apart. They've been inseparable ever since. Brothers play on the same team, both starting at the University of Georgia, and now they are trying to join the NFL in the same year for the first time since brothers Tiki and Rondé Barber did it in 1997. There's no shortage of brothers in the NFL, as you know, the Mannings, the McCourtys, the Gronkowskis, and now the Theus brothers would like to add their name to that list. So check out Draft Season on John and Nathan Theus out of the University of Georgia. Really good episode. These Draft Season ones have been really interesting. They go behind the really in-depth and behind the scenes on some of these potential draft picks. So you can check that out on iTunes, Google Play Music, or at si.com/draftseason. Also, we have a podcast called On the Clock, and this is draft-related as well. Sports Illustrated's Chris Burke has been tracking the NFL draft every single week for the entire college and pro season. It's all been leading up to this week, NFL draft week. So for hardcore draft fans, you cannot miss these final episodes. Search On the Clock on iTunes, Stitcher, and now on Google Play Music. All right, back with John Oran of the Sports Business Daily and Sports Business Journal. Let's move on to another member of the establishment, Bill Simmons. He just announced, or HBO just announced, that his show has a name and it has a date. I don't have the date in front of me, John. Do you know that off the top of your head when Simmons is launching?
I don't have it off the top of my head, no.
All right, well, I'll mention that at the end. So my apologies to Alan Kim, my awesome producer, will track that down as I'm talking here. So Simmons now is at HBO, and let's talk about sort of his properties. You've seen The Ringer I should take that back. Thank you, Alan Kim. Any Given Wednesday with Bill Simmons, the premiere date is June 22nd, an initial 20-episode season, half-hour show, weekly, Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. Thank you, Alan, very much for that. Half-hour, by the way, I think will benefit Simmons because an hour would be very tough for a guy where television is still a fairly new medium. But let's start with The Ringer first, John. You've seen the hires. They have a newsletter that they're putting out. They'll eventually launch their website soon. Do you think that website gets, let's say, even similar traction to Grantland or resonates in the space?
Oh, there's zero chance it gets similar traction as Grantland. I mean, Grantland had this pipe coming from ESPN.com that just fed into it. And by leaving that sort of marketing vehicle, they're not getting as much, but that doesn't mean that it won't be successful, and that doesn't mean that it won't be sort of as good as he had with Grantland. I mean, he's following the his playbook of what he used over at Grantland. He's made some great hires, and I mean, he's made hires of people that I read regularly, and I think that he can still you can still come up with a quality product, and you can do like, he's not going to be at ESPN. He was at the top of the sort of media chain. People saw him. He was on like pregame shows. They read his column. He was easy to find. He's not going to be as easy to find now. And so he's not going to have as many viewers. But that doesn't mean that his stuff isn't going to be as good. That doesn't mean that he's going to have not have a good business. And doesn't mean that you sort of look at the what Dan Patrick did when he left. Right. You know, he was on SportsCenter. Everybody watched him. Then he went and did a radio show. And I'm sure at first the radio show ratings weren't as good as his radio show ratings on ESPN. You know, but it just kind of like it's been a great business for him. I mean, that was a great move for Dan Patrick. And I think it's Bill's a smart guy. He knows how to tap into what the public wants. And I don't think he lost that because he left ESPN. I just think that it's going to have a smaller audience.
Yeah, I think that's true. The thing I really like about Simmons and Dan Patrick did the same thing. They both went to quality places after leaving ESPN. NBC Sports is a quality outfit, excellent platforms, solid production in terms of what they do really, really well. Simmons going to HBO, top line production, really treats its talent well, gives talent creative freedom. And then when it comes to The Ringer, you know, Bill has always said he has a no asshole rule when it comes to hiring. And I think he's done that once again. A lot of talented people there. And I think you're right, John, that the platform, you know, traffic will be not close to ESPN, but it will be relevant because I think they will do smart things. And I think ultimately this is the thing I respect most about Simmons is not his career and everything else. It's that he has built things using his stardom and hired smart people and given smart people launching pads and careers. It's one of the things I like most, if not the most, about Peter King at my place, and that he took his sort of star, and rather than just sort of continue to make more money, he built this microsite and has now hired, you know, 5, 6, 7 people to sort of help put them into the marketplace. So, yeah, I think The Ringer's going to do well. It's, you know, it'll never be a top 10 website according to ComScore, but I think it'll do really smart stuff, and I imagine it will find an audience. I will say this, whatever money is behind Simmons, whether it's VC money or something else, he's cut himself a nice deal because he's made a lot of hires for a startup in journalism/editorial, which, you know, God bless him. He's given some people jobs.
Yeah, you know, I'm with you. I applaud anybody that is in a hiring mode in journalism in 2016.
Yeah, it does not happen. Unfortunately, we're all working for places that, at a moment's notice, can cut. And when ESPN is cutting people, as John and I both covered significantly, then you know the industry has changed because that was, for many, many years, essentially a lifetime job. You parked at ESPN if you were 31 or something like that. You walked out the door at 65, but that has changed. John, what did you make of the...
Yeah, you know, Richard, more so than ESPN even, is the Fox News.
Right.
I mean, ESPN has gone through layoffs periodically. Fox has had people that have been there since the launch.
Right.
And so you want to talk about a lifetime job. And so now they're accepting buyouts and, you know, layoffs are likely. You know, that's a change in the industry right there.
Yeah, and the one thing about Fox, John, which, like, and I've said this many times, like, I really like dealing with Fox's PR people and Fox's people in general, because I do like the fact that they kind of they're nowhere near as sort of conservative in like what they say publicly compared to ESPN. ESPN is always very political and deliberate, and they're very scared about talking about themselves. So I've always liked the Fox ethos, which is a little bit of like pirates, but. But that's changed, as you just pointed out. Like, that company is the DNA of what Fox Sports is today is very different than what it was under David Hill. And I think a lot of that is what you said. They've lost a lot of people who bled Fox blood, who have now walked out the door in the last 6 to 12 months. It's, you know, whether under Jamie and others, it's a new place, or it feels like a new place to me.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It was sort of the Rupert Murdoch ethos, and when you mentioned ESPN, that's Disney. So,
right.
You know, they have to be more careful because Disney's more careful. But
right.
Rupert, yeah, say whatever the hell you want. It doesn't matter. And that does appear to be changing a little bit, I got to say.
We'll pause in this podcast to give a shout-out to ESPN's head of communications, Chris LaPlaca, who probably has hired an intern to transcribe all this and figure out what it means. All right, John, a couple.
That's a capital P, by the way. L-A, capital P,
right.
LaPlaca.
The, P, yeah. The capital P is ridiculous. All right, John, a couple more things here. What did you make of the, you know, both of us have talked to many women in the business. We know the kind of horrible shit that they face online, particularly in Twitter. You know, I remember Jemele Hill many times has told me, both as a podcast guest and just in talking to her, essentially there's not a day that goes by when she's not called the N-word on Twitter. You know, there are women who get all the time people saying that they're, you know, they want to rape them, physical threats, racial threats, sexist threats. I mean, it's really a horrible place. Yes, some men do get it. No, it's not even close to what women get. When men start talking about their bad Twitter mentions, it's among the bigger jokes of all time, especially those men who are putting stuff out there to be vitriolic and to want the reaction. So that gets back to Sarah Spain and Julie DeCaro, hopefully I'm pronouncing that right, DeCaro, I'm sorry, who were part of this video where, which trended on Twitter. It got an amazing amount of attention in terms of really, I think, bringing more attention to the public, just the kind of stuff that women face in this business. In the course of your reporting at Sports Business Daily, and in talking to women in the business, has that been your experience too, that just some of the stuff out there is just horrific?
Oh, I'd be in a fetal position if I had to deal with Jemele Hill's mentions. What I find to be amazing about that video is I'm usually pretty good at identifying viral videos as they start to get viral.
Right.
But I had no clue that was going to get so viral, because I just kind of knew that. I know what they put up with. I follow them on Twitter and see what women in the business put up with. And it was eye-opening to me that so many people were shocked by it. It was eye-opening to me that so many people decided to share it, because I think it's awful, of course. I mean, do I even need to say that, Richard?
No.
But it's like, it's the fact that people don't know this is going on, to me, is as awful. I can't imagine people don't know this is happening, like, right there in public. It's so that's what I found to be the most surprising. So good for them for shedding a light on this and creating something that, you know, it got shared on my Facebook page multiple times. I probably like 10 different people shared it, which is a lot. And I saw it on Twitter just about, like, you know, every couple of minutes, it seems.
Yeah, a couple guys from Chicago just put it together who are in the sort of the media field or the PR field. I don't think they thought, when I talked to them, I don't think they thought it was going to get viral at all. I think they just sort of were like, they wanted to put a local PSA out to sort of like expose this a little bit more. And so I'm glad it went viral, and I'm glad it was talked about. And that's where ESPN can be incredible. They pick something like that up and it becomes a conversation piece for the country. That's the power of that place. Speaking of ESPN, John, I segue beautifully here to the Big Ten. The Big Ten is, per your reporting, John, you've had quite a week. I hope Abe over at SBJ gives you a gigantic raise, because you've been breaking stories left and right.
God, I hope he's listening this far in.
Although my boy Jason McIntyre, the Big Lead, always refers to that place as the, you know, the place that dominates the sports media conversation. So me and you are going to have to get on our game a little bit to try to catch up. But you reported about the Big Ten rights. And that Fox obviously is going to be getting half that package in a significant part. I think you reported 50 basketball games, 25 football games. And that's clearly excellent package and an excellent package for them. That is now a big time conference in football. It's going to help FS1's ratings significantly. FS1's ratings are going up next year because of this alone, regardless of what happens with their studio shows. So in that sense, obviously, you know, they're going to get a bump there. Whether it's worth the money they spent, you know, I guess we'll see. But here's John, the fascinating thing about your reporting on this was ESPN's lowball offer to the Big Ten. That stunned me, because their platform is all about being the place and home for college sports. They know how important the Big Ten is. They also know how much the Big Ten wants them in terms of being a partner. Yet they lowball this based on your reporting like it was the Olympics or a package they usually don't go after. What do you make of this? That when I read your report on that stunned me.
So yeah, if I sound like I'm talking about a similar theme here, I am. Richard, think of another time that ESPN really wanted a property and put forth a lowball bid. It hasn't happened. They've been outbid before. They wanted the NCAA tournament bad, and they got outbid by CBS and Turner, you know? So they wanted the World Cup bad, and they got outbid by Fox. But they put forth really competitive bids. This Big Ten bid, you know, I think they instead of going for like half the package, they just kind of wanted to cream some of the best games off the top and pay for that. But it's unbelievable to me that ESPN, which has spent a ton of money over the years to become the leader in college sports on cable television, is letting one of the top two college conferences potentially go. I mean, so I have no clue what's going to happen with the second half of that package. I mean, I put this in the story. If ESPN put together a low bid for the a non-competitive bid is how it was described to me for the first half of the package, I have no confidence that they're going to turn around and put it together a competitive bid for the second half of the package.
John, I'm sorry, I didn't interrupt you to say, but I want you to continue on this. How much do you think this is a larger issue in terms of ESPN being asked by Disney to cost cut, and they just, you know, they have to pick their spots as to cost cut, or do you think it's something else?
No, I think it comes down to cost cutting, and I think that there are so many issues here of declining cable subscriber base, of the NBA deal, which is a huge deal, that's about to take effect. You know, that's taking a lot more money out there, and the image of ESPN now. In 2010, in 2013. They had bottomless pockets, and they could, okay, you know, you want $1 million for that, we'll pay that. You know, Skip Bayless wants an extra million, we'll give him an extra million. But right now, you're really seeing a more cost-conscious company. And so what I'm dying to see is if they're going to be able to, you know, shake the cushions on the couch and find enough quarters to put together a competitive bid to stick with the Big Ten. Or if this is, you know, something where it's like we've made our bets with Monday Night Football, the MLB, the SEC, and the NBA. And that's where our bets are, and everything else, if we can get some, we can. And I don't know where it's going to go, and I'm fascinated by it.
My guess would be that they're going to end up with a Big Ten, because I believe that the Big Ten schools are at a certain point going to demand from their leadership that we have to be on ESPN for recruiting and for publicity. We can't break this partnership up. It's too valuable for us in terms of a conference competing against other conferences for talent, for high school players. So I'm going to bet in the end that there's a deal there, but I agree with you. It's rather stunning.
Well,
you're more wired to this than me. This is essentially the last big rights deal, though, until 2022, right? So they can gamble and not have to overbid it, you know, for anything for at least 3 or 4 years.
Right, but what if they overbid and they go from 90 million homes to 70 million homes over those next three, and then all of a sudden, like, they're really losing money.
That's true.
So I think you're potentially right. And, you know, years ago, the ACC was flirting with leaving ESPN and going to Fox, and a whole bunch of really powerful ACC coaches like Coach K, Gary Williams was there as well. They almost revolted, and they sort of like turned that deal. The difference with the Big Ten is that Jim Delaney, like he runs the Big Ten. So, you know, if you know, I can't imagine Mark Turgeon, you know, Maryland's basketball coach, having any effect on or the same kind of effect Coach K or Gary Williams had on this sort of deal going forward. So this is really coming out of the you know, the conference office, as opposed to, you know, from the campuses.
That's interesting. And you may turn out to be right. Maybe the sort of the power shift. The one thing I think, John, both of us can agree on, at least in terms of ESPN and college, I mean, if they had to do it again, they would look long and hard at starting the Longhorn Network, right? I mean, that's just been for a money drain at this point, given that Texas has not been the program they thought it would be.
Yeah, I think there are a couple do-overs, and I think Longhorn has to be considered one. I mean, that's amazing. When they launched, everybody, you know, went nuts thinking that would give Texas an undue recruiting advantage, and it's done the exact opposite, hasn't it?
SEC Network, you think those long-term still a good play for them, or no?
Oh, yeah, it's great. I mean, that prints money. That as opposed to, like, the Pac-12 networks, you know, that it is in wide distribution, and they get a pretty penny for it. And the SEC Network was a great deal for both the SEC and ESPN.
I agree with that. I think that's, you know, unlike the Longhorn Network, I think long-term that's interesting. All right. A couple more here, and then we'll let you go. We'll keep these, fairly short, a minute or two tops. What have you made, John, of the rebranding of ESPN Radio? I get a lot of people on my Twitter feed because I'm fascinated by sports radio. I did it when I was very young. Both of us do a lot of shows around the country. You know, I do a number of them at this point weekly, sort of contractually weekly. And so people are fascinated by Mike and Mike, and in particular, how that show has really become a television show and not a radio show. And while it's they've inched up in the ratings on TV, which is ultimately what they're trying to do because that'll bring some more ad revenue in, I hear from a lot of people who tell me they don't like the show anymore as a radio show. And ESPN Radio has made a dramatic shift in its lineup. Coward gone, rebranding Mike and Mike, move Le Batard, move Bomani Jones, brought on all new voices on the weekend. Some of these moves have worked. Some of these moves have not worked. And in some major cities, and let's just talk about my city, New York, your city, D.C., Boston, Philly, ESPN Radio is nowhere. And so it's interesting. What do you make of ESPN Radio's moves? And then maybe even beyond that, where is the business going in terms of these national radio networks against local?
You know, that's the bigger story that I don't have a really smart answer to in terms of the national radio. But, you know, ESPN, like in Mike and Mike, you know, they occupy the those morning hours on ESPN2. It made sense to turn TV is still so much more powerful than radio. So it made sense to, instead of just simulcasting a radio show and having it be bad TV, why don't you have good TV and then you stream it to the radio? You know, I was talking to Rob King about the Sports Center, and he says the morning Sports Center from like 7 to 10. Is designed so that you can listen to it on Sirius XM. Mm. You know, so they have a lot of sort of highlights with radio calls on it instead of having the anchor sort of talk over the highlights. And it's designed to be sort of more auditory. But you know, ESPN for a long time is as like, you know, they rebranded to ESPN Audio. And so they've followed the whole podcast route. And I just think that there seems to be less, they're less concerned almost with radio as much as they are just kind of getting this audio and getting it out to as many people as they can.
Right. Although I will say though, nobody is better in terms of a podcast network and pushing their content out. I really admire what they've done there. You know, they turn their television shows around in podcast form on the dime, and they've put a lot of podcasts out there, which is to their credit. You know, Simmons should get credit for this as well and pushing that at Grantland. But, you know, Bill Barnwell's podcast today, when I checked, is the number one podcast in the sports and rec division in the country right now. And, you know, it's a very new podcast. So yeah, part of that is iTunes kind of rewards new podcasts more. But that tells you something. And that gets back into what we mentioned, John, with Simmons and The Ringer, is that if you have ESPN's fire hose, I mean, it is just a game changer. You know, you put a story. Imagine if we had stories on the front of ESPN.com instead of the front of SI.com and SBD. We're talking millions in terms of readers as opposed to something else.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have the distribution, but I could tell you every time Bill Simmons retweets one of my stories, like our website goes nuts.
Yeah, you're now the favorite son of Bill Simmons and Rob King. I feel like those are your guys now. I'm getting asked for you to give me your thoughts on the Pac-12 in terms of potential sales and Pac-12 network, I should say, in terms of potential sales scenarios, et cetera.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with the Pac-12. They hired an investment bank and they're looking to take on equity partners, and they haven't been successful yet. And I think that, you know, when people kick the tires on it, they see long-term deals with cable operators and satellite operators that really keep the network hamstrung. And so people, some of the bankers that I talk to, they don't see the path forward, or they don't see an easy path forward. And that to me is really surprising, because, as you know, Richard, when you talk to these investment bankers, they want to get involved in sports TV. They throw stupid money at it because it's sports TV. And they hired, I think it was Lazard about a year ago, and nothing has really happened yet. And I haven't checked in on that in a couple of months, but it's been crickets pretty much.
John, CBS Sports Network has avoided the arms race that FS1 and ESPN is in. And, you know, it's a twofold question there. It's interesting. On the one hand, you give the Sean McManuses of the world props, because they did not, you know, they have stuck to a budget basically for the most part, and have not blown it, and, have sort of steadied out a little bit the rise, or not the rise, but the competition that clearly the FS1s and the ESPNs are undergoing. But CBS Sports Network is nowhere in terms of the conversation, in terms of relevancy, in terms of anybody talking about it, and it's not rated. CBS has made that decision not to have it rated by Nielsen, so you don't even know what the viewership is, but the viewership is clearly very, very low. What do you make of CBS's cable sports strategy at the moment? Do you like them being under the radar and not really having great relevancy, or should they at a certain point dip their hand in and try to put something big time on that network?
Now, I would like them to do it, because it would give me more to write about, but I respect their decision. I think that I can't name a property that CBS has done a deal with that they've overspent on. Yeah. Or, you know, and they are very good about renewing their contracts. They're longtime partners with, you know, the Masters, with the NFL. I mean, when the US Open left CBS to go to ESPN, it was shocking, because CBS doesn't lose partners. And they've been very fiscally responsible. So in 2013, when Fox Sports 1 launched, and I think that was a year after Versus became NBC Sports Network, and you had ESPN, Comcast, you had basically Disney, Comcast, and News Corp throwing money at every sports rights out there. You know, CBS, they didn't get competitive. They were happy with where they were, and they decided to grow the broadcast business. And right now the broadcast business is looking pretty darn good.
John, 5 years from now, where's Katie Nolan working?
Oh, that's a great question. I have no idea. Katie is she's a star by any stretch, even though her TV ratings are so small. My one Katie Nolan story is, I was at the Super Bowl, and I'm going down Radio Row, and they have a set for Katie, and Katie's up there doing her show, and there were people 10, 15 deep crowding around her, and they're like NFL Hall of Famers doing radio shows right next to her, who are being ignored as people are just sitting there, just kind of mesmerized by her. So I hope she gets a bigger platform. I think that she could exist on a bigger platform, and people who know talent and then can identify talent a lot better than me all sing her praises. So I would expect she would be on I can't tell you where she's going to go, but I expect she's going to be on a bigger platform.
I'm going to say she will be partnering in some form or fashion with Bill Simmons 5 years from now. I can't tell you exactly where. Maybe it's HBO, maybe it's something else, but that would be
he loves her.
He does love her. All right, John, is there anything else we need to, I've kept you, I told you 45 minutes. We're now at 55. If this was Jimmy Traina, being that he would be so obsessed with the airtime, we'd probably be going an hour 20. But I know you have a busy day. So is there any topic that you want to get to that we did not get to? Because it really has been one of the craziest weeks in the media business, where, like you said at the top, regardless of what I think about Skip Bayless, two high-profile talents at ESPN turning down ESPN to go elsewhere. It essentially has not happened in our universe. So it's been a crazy week. So is there anything else that you want to hit? Is there anything you want to plug before we get out of here?
There are two points I want to make.
Okay.
One is when you launched your podcast, I thought it was going to be a disaster.
Thanks.
And I thought that you were going to run out of people to talk to, I've been pleasantly surprised.
Well, this is the show where we ran out of people to talk to.
Yeah, no kidding. We're scraping the bottom now. Let's talk about Skip Bayless. But it's been, it's been good. You have a roster of people. I mean, I can't imagine there are that many sports media people out there to talk to, and you found them. And it's kudos to you, because I've been completely wrong on this.
I appreciate that. And two, the one thing I would say is that I think you're underestimating how many people not just work in our business, but how many people are interested in what people in our business do. And that's where I have to give my bosses credit at Sports Illustrated. It took them a long time, but they finally came around understanding that media content can draw. I mean, at a certain point, I was getting really good traffic, so they sort of had to do it on a business then. But you've worked in the space, John, and you know people are interested in what radio hosts do and what the beat reporter of the Panthers does and what like a producer working for Fox covering the World Series. There's a lot more interest in these jobs because so many millions of us are sports fans, and working in the sports field is interesting, I think, to somebody who's a lawyer or a dentist or a construction worker. It's an interesting field. So I actually wasn't worried that I would ever run out of guests. What I was initially worried about was anybody going to listen? And the numbers have been 50 times better than I expected. So I appreciate that, but I would just disagree with you a little bit. I think there's more interest out there in this stuff than you think, and I haven't even touched, for the most part, anybody in the blogging world or, you know, working for like the SB Nations or the Voxes and the Vices. Like, there's hundreds of people I feel like I could still interview.
Oh, absolutely. Just with the on-air people, it's and by and large, they're very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the second thing I want to do, I remember you had a great podcast with Jim Miller, who wrote the ESPN
right.
book. And I think it went to like a minute or an hour 20 or something.
Alan,
like
that. Is that right? You taped that. Alan will check it up for me. It was long.
That was
right after
one.
That was, you know, an hour on Grantland straight.
And I just remember at the end of that, I just started laughing at myself. I was like, who is still listening to this? So with that in mind, I do want to do a shout out to Soltis and LaPlaca.
Well, you should say, you know, Mike Soltis and Chris LaPlaca, because nobody's, you know, very few people know that.
Okay.
By the way, Jim Miller,
Jen
Sabatel is my favorite. Jim Miller, an hour and 21 minutes. Wow, we really did go long there. By the way, John, that I believe that and Jalen Rose or somebody or Paul, whatever, the Jim Miller one got to number two on iTunes in sports. So that's among, which is crazy. I mean, think about that. It's me and Jim Miller. This is not the Skip Bayless and Troy Aikman talking. So people were interested, but. But yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt you. So Chris LaPlaca is the head of ESPN PR. Mike Soltis is his VP, essentially his Joe Biden. And who else did you give a shout out to? Jen Sabatel is the head of CBS.
Jen Sabatel,
CBS
and
Sports
Dan Sabrine of CBS.
Right.
Maybe Greg Hughes. No, Greg Hughes hired somebody. He got Chris McCluskey to listen.
I'm
to
down on Greg Hughes today just because they declined me on the Tirico story. So I'll probably love him again. But I'm down on NBC for the day.
And then, of course, how can we not mention Lou D'Amelio, Dan Bell, Chris Politia, and then the Fox PR staff
like,
over there.
And Eddie Model. You don't want to leave anybody out, right?
Eddie Model, Illy,
John
of
Budnick,
course.
John Ileana Pena, and Valerie, and the rest of us. You know, I will say, John, listen, I give ESPN a lot of gruff. And by the way, they deserve all of it and in terms of their PR department. But for the most part, I respect everyone I deal with in PR. They are... we disagree fundamentally on so much stuff, and our jobs are different. We have the exact opposite jobs. Their job is to put their company in the best possible light. My job is to find what the accuracy of the story is. But for the most part, I think it is professional between those who cover sports media and those who represent sports media in PR. At the moment, I'm only not talking to one person out of like 75 people, so I feel like that's a good percentage.
Oh, that's pretty good. I'm at probably two or three.
But really? And you're far nicer than me. So I'm actually surprised that you have more than me.
I actually have had a week this week where one said, as I started an interview with an executive, hey, let's keep this on background and then just run some quotes by us. Like they're going to approve my quotes.
Right.
And then the other said, I know the executive said this on the record, but do you mind not using that? And I'm like, what are you talking about? Right. I'm not your PR arm. But but by and large, I agree. They do a very good job.
One of the things in I actually learned this in journalism school way, way back in the day, which was great. One of my professors at Columbia said one of the great things to throw a PR person off from at the start of the interview is to ask, especially if they're sitting with you for an executive, you ask immediately how they spell their first and last name because you want to have it right for the story. and it just throws them off. Like, what? Why am I in your story? I'm like, well, because you're sitting with the, you know, Executive X, and it's my job to report to everybody what the scene was. So can you give me your first and last name, and just give me a sense of you. Where'd you go to college? Are you married? Like, it really throws PR people off. So
yeah. What's your opinion on Skip Bayless?
Right, put that in the back of your hat. And you know, John, I love nothing more than including ESPN PR people within the framework of a story. And I have one today coming because I have I shouldn't actually tell you, John, as a competitor, but I have an interview with a ESPN executive you're really going to be interested in. And Mike Soltis makes an appearance in the story.
Oh, right. Every time I get Soltis in, I feel good about myself.
Good. Yeah. All right. So let's wrap this up. By the way, I apologize to everyone outside of the really inner people in the media who just listen to the last 5 minutes. Alan Kim, my producer, is sleeping on the floor right now.
Yeah. Do you have minute-by-minute ratings? Because they just plummeted.
Right,
yeah.
We'll get Mike Mulvihill of Fox. He'll give us the breakdown for that. That's another name drop by me. Terrible. All right. So John Arand is the guest, or has been the guest. He is the media reporter for Sports Business Daily, also Sports Business Journal. You can follow him on Twitter at John Arand. He has my highest recommendation on all of those. One of the most wired, if not the most wired, person in the business when it comes to this stuff. I like a lot of the people who are within my sports media world, but to be very blunt, no bullshit here. I don't think there's a reporter I trust more than Arand, because I think if he writes something, I know it to be true. I wish he had a little more opinions within his stories, but in terms of factual inaccuracy, he is money in the bank. So John, I'm really glad that you popped on today. You've now taken the number one spot over Jimmy Traina as my go-to person on the media. So that's exciting. And I hope you come back. I really appreciate you being on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. That was fun.
All right, back in the studio. We'll wrap up quick. My thanks to John Arand. That was great. I'm definitely going to have him back. That was a lot of fun. I could talk about this stuff forever. Thanks to Alan Kim for producing, of course, one of the ace people here at SI.com. My thanks to Dan Bloom at Panoply, Ryan Hunt, Paul Fichtenbaum, Chris Stone, John Wertheim, and Ben Eagle for all their podcast support. And a shout out to Ben Marston, who is my usual producer. And thanks for listening. You know, we're going to do these sort of sports media talks every now and then amid the other guests. So this is Richard Deitch. I'll see you again on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.